This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Today on the Breakfast Grill, I'm talking to Dr. Kenneth Pereira, the Managing Director of Hibiscus Petroleum Berhad, Malaysia's first SPAC, and with oil and gas assets in Malaysia, Australia and the UK. Perhaps just give a quick summation of how business has been in the last few months.
Of course, Chuang, good morning to everybody, and thank you very much for inviting me back onto the Breakfast Grill. I think the last few months, everybody has been impacted globally with the whole COVID-19 phenomena. We have not been spared. We are impacted in several ways. I think first, from what we call the health and safety perspective, oil and gas platforms are very congested areas to work in. So all the SOPs on physical distancing and all of it requires special kind of adaptation. So just to say that, we have managed to maintain business continuity, mostly because our people have been very committed. Before they go offshore, and when they go offshore to work, they spend 28 days offshore, consecutive days offshore, most of them. And they end up having to do 14 days in quarantine. We create a green bubble for them before they go offshore. We test them a couple of times, normal testing, to ensure that they have no, they're not carrying the virus. And then when they go offshore, we try to maintain a reasonably safe and healthy environment. It's not been easy. There have been some cases where people have got offshore with the infection, but we got to get them back onshore as soon as possible. So a lot of people working in this industry have been impacted from the health and safety perspective. I would say, and when they come back onshore, they sometimes don't live in their families are not in the same state as they're working in. And then they've not been able to cross the border to go back home. So then they stay in a different state, and then they go back offshore again. So many of our staff have not seen their families for a long period, more than a year. So a lot of sacrifices have been made by people working at the coalface, and that this has been one kind of an impact on us. Of course, on the other side, that's operationally. On the business side, the oil and gas market, in terms of the volatility of crude prices because of supply and demand factors, have also been impacted by COVID-19. On the supply side, I would say, interesting phenomena. Everybody has been spending time at home. We've had time to reflect on what's important in life. Health has become very important for those close to us and ourselves, etc. And because of that, people have been looking at the environment. Can we do more for the environment? The whole, if you recall, the whole climate change movement over the period of this COVID-19, it's really gone up a notch or two. It started with climate change. It then moved to climate disaster. Now we're into a climate emergency. So people have really been thinking hard about how the environment could be better from a health and safety perspective. And because of that, a lot of oil companies in Europe particularly have been pressured to kind of think about whether they want to be in the fossil fuels business. And because of that, they've been moving their investments from fossil fuel investments into renewable investments, causing maybe a tightening of supply and oil prices now remaining a little bit stable, maybe even trending up. So that's happening on the supply side. On the demand side, of course, aeroplanes are not flying, cars are not on the road. So demand has been soft. But OPEC and their alliance partners have been very disciplined, I would say, to have maintained quotas, to have kept to quotas. And because of that, there seems to be some kind of balance in the oil and gas market with some reasonable crude oil prices being achieved. So that's really been our environment the last few, I would say probably a year and a half now.
Yeah, it's quite seismic, the shift from fossils to clean fuels, Ken. And we will talk about that, especially, big names like BHP and Duke Energy moving to the other side. But just in terms of yourselves at Hibiscus, and of course, yours is a business predicated on basically marginal oil fields and, extracting as much as you can and cost efficiencies as well. Perhaps if you can talk to us about your end of year financial results in terms of how much you got from your oil assets and your gas assets, And I guess the geographic split between the UK, Australia and Malaysia.
So that's just to say one thing. We are not really in marginal oil fields. We are into midlife oil fields. So marginal, when you speak about marginal oil fields, generally the word marginal, it's an economic definition. A field, any field, even a large field can become marginal, economically marginal at a very low oil price. So we are into midlife oil fields. These are fields that have been producing for a while. And then after a while, it becomes better for a more kind of agile operator to start managing these type of fields because our cost structure might be lower, our attention to, you know, to the smaller opportunities might be, we might be more focused. So just a point on the marginal fields. Talking about the performance of the assets, I think one of the for our results and all of that, we've been working on business continuity. We cannot control oil price, so our job is to control waste, I would say. I don't like to say we control costs, but we try to control waste. And when you control waste, you control cost. And what our strategy business model is in this realm of midlife fields is to manage your cost so that you maintain as much headroom as you can between the oil prices, which is commodity, so you're a price taker, you just have to take what the market gives you, and your costs, and that's what gives you your margin. In terms of production, so our split, we have producing assets in Malaysia and in the North Sea. The North Sea is roughly about a quarter to a third of our production, and Malaysia, the Malaysian assets produce between two-thirds and three-quarters of our production. So that's really the split. In terms of profitability, there are different tax structures applicable in both of these jurisdictions. And because of the tax structures, sometimes the profitability, the contribution from each of the assets, the UK might give us a third of our production, but it will actually contribute half of our profits. That's roughly where we are, because of the tax structures that apply, which make it such that the UK can be providing a bigger contribution with a lower volume produced.
And I know you don't talk about costs as well, but you talk about waste. But in terms of just your OPEX, I think that's quite germane in terms of the margin that you might want profit. According to your results, as per recently announced, well, in this fiscal year, OPEX per barrel of oil equivalent ranges from as low as $18 a barrel to about $38 a barrel, given today's oil price of about $70 per barrel. Can you just shed some light in terms of how you manage your cost structure?
The cost structure, it's we really have to look at a lot of items. The thing about, I was talking just now about midlife assets and agile operators working on midlife assets. The important thing is to understand that you are not going to find a dollar saving anywhere, but you could find 10 items saving you 10 cents in different places, and then you make up the dollar. So what we go around doing is looking around for those 10 items that saves us 10 cents each, and then we save a dollar. So we look, and that's why I'm saying, you've got to have an eye for this detail, to look for ways to optimize all the time, be thinking, how do you get some more, extract a little bit more value out of this asset, sweat this asset a bit more. It's not just a cost reduction exercise, because there are many safety considerations offshore. What you don't want to be doing is compromising on the safety and that exposing employees and assets and environment to risk. So you just don't want to do that. So you want to follow all the tough standards that we are kind of subject to, but you want to make sure that in doing so, there is no wastage. You optimize as much as possible. So that's really how we look at it. And you're right, our Malaysian assets, average unit production cost, cash cost, in the range of about $15 to $20. That's where we try to keep it. and the UK assets in the range $20 to $25 a barrel. That's what we try to keep it as.
We're talking today to Dr. Kenneth Pereira, the managing director of Hibiscus Petroleum Berhad, Malaysia's first SPAC, and also the Bursa listed upstream oil and gas producer with assets both here in Malaysia, Australia, and the UK, and of course soon in Vietnam and in the region. Ken, we'll come back after this and talk about your purchase of Repsol's assets to expand your footprint in Indochina. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
We are talking today to Dr. Kenneth Pereira, the managing director of Hibiscus Petroleum Berhad, Malaysia's first SPAC, and an upstream oil and gas producer with assets in Malaysia, Australia, and the UK. Now, you are buying Repsol's assets. Of course, Repsol is the Spanish multinational energy producer. You want to expand your footprint in Vietnam. You've talked about how this will triple your average net daily oil, gas, and condensate production in the fiscal year ahead. Let's talk about the cost of acquisition first. $212 million. That's quite a lot.
First, Chuang, let me just say the assets are primarily in Malaysia, with a small element, small component in Vietnam. So we are actually buying assets in a backyard that we know very well, okay, which is our home base. So we've got assets that come with the Repsol portfolio, which are located in offshore Terengganu, offshore North Sabah, actually adjacent to the assets we already have, and also then a small footprint in the Vietnamese waters. So that's kind of the geography. Talking about the valuation, okay? These assets are going to take us from something like 9,000 barrels of oil equivalent a day to something like 25,000 barrels of oil equivalent a day. So there's going to be a substantial jump in our production rates. And we managed to work out, it's also, I should mention, we are doing something called a corporate sale. In other words, we are buying shares in a company that Repsol owns. And these shares will through this company, will give us ownership of all these different assets in Malaysia and in Vietnam and all of this production. So we've done our valuations, we've done our assessments, we got them verified by a third party. And now as part of our Bursa approval process, our shareholder approval process, there's also a second validation of our valuation done, a fair market value. And the fair market value accorded to the asset was about $285 million. We closed the deal with Repsol for $212.5 million. So we're very happy with that. That deal was struck earlier in the year. We announced it on the 1st of June this year. But the deal was actually, we actually bid for the assets much earlier in the year, probably in January, sometime very much early in the year, when oil prices were even lower. So we think that if we had the assets valued today, it would probably even fetch a higher valuation because oil prices have been stronger this period. So we are comfortable with the valuation. We should say also that when we acquired the asset, and I'm saying the asset is a corporate vehicle, the company actually had some cash in it. So it started off with cash in the range of about $35, $40 million of cash in the company. There's also a very interesting component of the deal. The deal gives us economic interest in the asset effective 1st of January 2021. In other words, today, that asset, even though the transaction isn't completed, the asset is actually earning money, which eventually accrues to us. So all of that is adding up into the company. And eventually, what we believe we will end up actually paying from shareholders' money is really less than $100 million for this asset. So we feel that we have managed to structure a very nice deal for us. It comes about from the fact that it was a corporate sale. The company had money, the company, the SPV that they had, that they were selling already had cash in it, where it's accumulating cash as we go now until the completion date. So that also helps us mitigate the price we're paying for the asset. And eventually, we believe that shareholders' funds that will be required either through debt or some equity will come from, will be less than $100 million. That's how we are looking at it right now.
Yeah, Cameron, Paper looks like a very interesting acquisition for you. But the street is quite intriguing in terms of its response. There was an initial knee-jerk reaction to the good, but the volumes have been very, very thin on Hibiscus. And of course, the share price is also not reflecting possibly the earnings impact. I wonder how much of that has got to do with the fact that there's an abandonment exposure to this asset. And of course, there's also the issue of both Petronas Carigali and PetroVietnam waiving their preemption rights on this asset. Can you explain those things?
Yeah, Petronas and Carigali and PetroVietnam have waived their rights. They are part of national oil company kind of structures, and I think I really don't understand their rationale, but I believe has a policy or has a kind of a incentive. They would not want to preempt because they already have interest in the asset. Petronas Carigali is already an interested party in this asset, as is PetroVietnam. They already have got equity exposure in the asset. They don't need more. Okay. And they also would like to encourage third-party investment in these assets. So if they end up preempting every transaction that came about in their countries, they would end up holding all the assets, and they would end up having to invest in all the assets themselves. So by spreading the risk a little bit like this, I think they create a very healthy market. They create an environment where investors do want to come in and invest, and they encourage others to come in and invest. So and they also tell the market there are interested parties interested to buy positions in the assets in the countries where they are regulators. So I think that could potentially be part of their rationale, though I can't speak for them. So the abandonment exposure, what we have to understand is in Malaysia, there is an abandonment cess. You have a savings plan, actually. It's an insurance policy. Petronas has got a trust fund, and every year you contribute to this trust fund, and you contribute per barrel of oil that you produce. So this trust fund builds up. So when we need to abandon the fields, we go back to Petronas and say, Petronas, there was the savings plan we contributed to. Can we recover the money from the savings plan now? We've done everything according to procedure. We have met all the abandonment standards. We'd like to claim off the savings fund and the savings plan that we actually once contributed to all the way along. In North Sabah right now, we are actually contributing to an abandonment fund. In the UK, we are contributing to abandonment fund. And what this causes is for there to be no shocks at the end, when all of a sudden somebody needs to abandon something and there's no money to do it. Petronas has been very, very, long range in its planning to do this. And they've been collecting money, each barrel produced out of the ground. And you pay a certain small number of cents into or dollars into a fund. And this fund builds up every year and has facilities in Malaysia and else in other countries as well. They apply the same rules. You can then draw on the fund to clean up the environment after you. So this exists. So we have the responsibility to undertake the work and get it done. But the funds have been already contributed long before this.
Dr. Kenneth Pereira, the Managing Director of Hibiscus Petroleum Berhad, Malaysia's first spec on the grill. Just one more point on the Repsol acquisition, Ken, if you can. Regulatory challenges. Obviously, there's a Vietnamese government element in this. How high would you rate the possibility of regulatory obstacles?
We are encouraged by the fact that PetroVietnam gave us released us from the preemption. So they actually gave a waiver. They don't intend to preempt. That's a good signal that they've already had a look at you and said, okay, this guy wants to come in. I think we are going to allow him to invest. So when you get past that stage, then the question that the regulators are trying to answer, are you fit as an operator? Because they've already agreed that you are fit as an investor. They've agreed that because they've given the waiver. Now they will be contemplating, are you fit as an operator of these assets? In Malaysia, we have a reasonably good track record with Petronas, which is underpinned by many awards from Petronas for good operations. So we hope that on the Petronas side, the approvals to be an operator here. We're already an operator. We have been given many awards over the last few years as an operator in many elements of the business, whether it's safety, it's operations, it's drilling. We've got so many awards. And we hope that that track record, the fact that we are an joint operator in the North Sea and we are an operator in Malaysia, also helps us convince PetroVietnam that we are a responsible operator for Vietnam. I will tell you that when you are a joint operator in the North Sea, you generally would be considered as an operator, a fit operator in many, many parts of the world. You know, there are certain areas. If you're an operator in the Gulf of Mexico, if you're an operator in the North Sea, if you're an operator in the Bass Strait of Australia, these are places where there are strong regulatory frameworks, there are mature markets, and people generally recognize your operating track record in these areas.
Yeah. And we're nearly out of time. I just want to ask you very quickly two questions, which I hope you can answer very quickly. First of all, when do you expect Repsol to be finalized and agreed? And secondly, is there a transition for Hibiscus to go to a more clean energy profile, given the fact that a lot of fresh capital is flowing to more ESG and type clean energy outfits as opposed to fossil fuel based?
Okay, so the Repsol transaction, it seems to be progressing smoothly. So we hope we'll get it done. You know, we hope we can get it done in this calendar year. We truly hope for that. On the sustainability part, going into a green energy space, I think we are definitely making a lot of effort in this area. I would say that we are going to do, we will do things which are complementary to our business. We believe that, we're not going to pivot and go and do photovoltaic, solar panels or something like that. We're not going to go and do wind turbines. We're not going to plant trees. What we're going to do is do stuff which is complementary to our business to make sure that we decarbonize our own business. Because going on to 2050, when everybody says we're going to be net zero and all of it, 50% of the energy mix in the world is still going to be fossil fuels, oil, gas, and coal. It's about 50%. In the best scenarios, it'll be 40%. So the important thing is to have a kind of initiative to make sure that that 40% component of the energy mix, the global energy mix at that time, is also clean. So I think that's where we are focused on. We're looking at technologies to clean up our own type of business.
And it was a huge pleasure chatting. Thank you for your candidness and thank you for your thoughts. I was talking to Dr. Kenneth Pereira, the Managing Director of Hibiscus Petroleum Berhad, Malaysia's first spec, and of course an upstream oil and gas producer with assets in Malaysia, Australia, the UK, and soon, hopefully, Vietnam. BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.